When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, everybody, this is Phil Town.
And this is Danielle Town.
Welcome to the Invested Podcast. My daughter and I are deconstructing Buffett-style investing for the last 8 years.
Deciphering.
Delineating. Translating for you.
Meditating
what is so
upon.
Simple. Yeah, right. The very simple, if not easy, I mean, I love this investing strategy so much, right? You buy a wonderful business, you buy it when it's on sale. That's what you do. Yep. And it's, I don't know, it couldn't be more simple than that. And yet so many people struggle with the concepts that are fundamental to being able to do that. And a lot of them are in your head. Really, the idea that really that... We make most of our money while we wait. It is just fundamental to the whole idea. So you buy a wonderful business, you buy it when it's on sale, and then you just sit on it and just kind of monitor it as you would if you own the whole business. And magic things happen, but there's a problem with that. And that problem is the ability to sit quietly and do nothing while the stock market's going and doing what it's doing, but this stock is not doing much, and it's even maybe going down by 30, 40, 50% in price.
That's true, yes, okay.
And it becomes an emotional problem.
Yeah, no, that's definitely real, yes. I'm not sure I agree with the characterization that the biggest problem is understanding that you have to wait. I think the biggest problem is being able to confidently identify a wonderful company. And then maybe the second biggest problem for most of us is like having enough money then to invest into the wonderful company. And then maybe the third biggest problem would be like, once you're there, now chill. And
well, I'm going to take issue with your second one, that although that's the real world of, you know, wanting to have more money to put into things, really it doesn't have much at all to do with the actual investing strategies.
No, it doesn't. It's just the problem that
yeah, it is a problem, but it's not a problem in terms of the investing process.
Correct. No.
So it's just really the first one, you know, identifying.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So identifying is actually the key. Identifying is easy. You can use screening tools and it'll identify lots of good companies. The problem is the confident part of it that you just said there. I'll illustrate this by saying that if the stock price goes down from where you bought it, let's say you're buying a company at $75 a share and you think it's worth a minimum of $150, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then the market seems to not agree with you for months at a time and this stock price gradually goes down to $50.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So Warren says, you know, well, you're not wrong because nobody agrees with you, and you're not right because everyone agrees with you. Yeah, but in the moment, the fact that no one agrees with you, and those are really smart people out there, is disconcerting at best, and it's really sort of emotional trauma at worst, where you start to disbelieve your own research, your own confidence is not strong enough to overcome the fear that you've made a mistake. So you bought this thing at 75, now it's at 50. Now, if you
I totally imagine that is absolutely the case for lots of people. And I suppose that's your experience since you're talking about it.
Yeah.
It's not, I have to say, it's not my experience. So maybe,
how could this,
maybe my
what?
Particular brand of
what?
Of freaking out, of trepidation over stock investing leads to unexpected benefits? I don't know.
Wow, maybe so. Maybe all of the other trepidations that are going on out there that keep you from buying a company have created such a high level of confidence once you buy it that this stock price going down issue isn't really
that's exactly it. I mean, frankly, if I buy a company that is by definition on sale, or else I wouldn't be buying it, and it went up like immediately, I would be very confused by that. That would be really odd, right? Because why would that happen all of a sudden when I've identified a company that's going through a problem? So unless I would have predicted that, in which case, fine.
Well,
yeah, I don't know.
I applaud your completely non-intuitive emotions here. The stock price that you bought at 75 is now at 100, and you're going through some emotional questions. What did I do? As opposed to, you bought it at 75, now it's at 50, which is the issue I was raising.
Yeah,
it's
I don't know.
It's at 50, and it's creating uncertainty, because not only did the market disagree with you on the original purchase, but it has continued to vehemently disagree.
But like, of course it would. Like what? You're specifically choosing to make a purchase that the market disagrees with. And then 5 minutes later, you're like, why don't they agree with me?
I was thinking more 6 months later.
Okay. Six months later.
They're not just continuing to disagree and the stock price is at 75. They're really more against it now than they were before.
Well, and so that's where like facts come into play. What new information has come out in those 6 months that has made more people sell their stock?
Very good answer.
Discover that. Maybe that changes the view. I have learned some things. I have not mastered the, as you can see from our weather series, I have not mastered the pre-purchase trepidation yet. But once I'm in, I'm in. And I feel like I've covered my bases at that point. And of course, there's always bases that you find out you haven't covered. And that's where the worries come in, and you got to like do that research. But
having been
the market doesn't bother me. I guess that's what I'm saying. In no way bothers me.
Okay. I wish I was as certain, but I'm not. I've gone through the experience of having bought into a company and created so much hubris and confirmation bias, having had that all come about, that even when it was really, really in trouble, I couldn't see that it was in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, and I kept buying it. And this is that, so that was leading, I'm leading to that point, which
That's
is
fair.
That if you're confident in the company, then the price going down presents one and only one opportunity, and that is to buy more. Mm. And this, of course, is Warren talking about somebody shouting prices at you to buy your farm when you have no intention of selling your farm. And the only interest you'd have in the prices being shouted is if they'll sell their farm at some absurdly low price.
This is Warren Buffett, for anybody who doesn't get the reference. Warren Buffett, in one of his annual letters, gave a whole example of somebody shouting over the fence to buy.
So here we have the company. We buy at 75. We think it's worth 150. And now they're shouting over the fence that they will sell all of their farm for $50. And so with Buffett's view and a farm, you look at the potential of this to produce cash flow over the future, or even better, you're looking at a rental house in the neighborhood you live in, and you're looking at this rental house ability to produce income over the future, and if the prices get wildly optimistic, then perhaps you can think about selling the house, but in general, you'd just probably do better to hold on to it. And that's kind of the general idea here, is it will do better to hold on to it, but boy, is it emotional when you've got a lot of money in a company and you really think you understand it, And then the price goes down by another 30%. And it's just like the market is just going, you do not get it. And in that environment, what I do, honey, is I try to stay humble and reevaluate the inversions to this investment. I want to take another look.
Yeah, if absolutely.
This is going on, I've just got to take another look. Just, almost like, hey, could somebody please come and look at this from the outside and see if I have been caught up in hubris and confirmation bias, and I can no longer see reality, and I'm ignoring massive signs on the horizon that this company's in trouble.
Yes.
Right?
I think that's all so real and smart and exactly what everyone should do. I totally agree. I'm in
the process. The reason I'm thinking about this is I am in the, right now, today, I'm just told several of my analysts to get on a plane and fly to Hawaii.
That's such a you thing to do.
Get over there now. And
get over there.
In 4 or 5
Go to
days.
Hawaii.
Go to Hawaii.
And they're like, oh no. Oh.
They were not like that. They were like, yeah, we'll go. Because there's an element of this analysis that involves $2.6 billion where we have made certain assumptions. And the only way to know for sure that those assumptions are correct is to go there and look personally and talk personally to the people involved in this thing.
I mean, and that's you just said the magic word, and that's where the confidence that is not warranted, unwarranted confidence, there's probably a better word than that, comes from. It comes in the assumptions, in the leaps.
Yes. Yes.
And unfortunately, and this is the part that I struggle with so much before buying a company, there are always assumptions that you have to make. You can't, I've never seen one where you can't, where you have every single bit of information and know the future. It's just not going to happen. So there's always some sort of assumption or connection of the dots. And
but these are not all alike.
It's difficult.
You're very, very right. But these assumptions range from, you know, the sun stops rising sort of assumptions, which border on the absurd or border on the if that happens, nothing else matters sort of thing.
Yeah, those are the ones I always think about.
Yeah. I mean, you want the assumptions to be on the order of what you would make looking at a rental house in your neighborhood that you like. And
this is why we got to finish our weather convo, because this is the weather
stuff. This is the weather. This is the weather.
So. But when it comes to an assumption wherein you can go to the place and find out if your assumption is in the ballpark or maybe correct, that's a different, that requires almost a different word. It's so different. That's a conjecture that can be confirmed.
Right, I guess so. Although, you know, here's your house in a neighborhood, in a city, right? I mean, you're there. And so is it really? I mean, you're making the assumption that this is going to be a continually improving neighborhood.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course.
For as long as you're going to live.
Yeah, that's that future assumption. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I want those assumptions to be on that order of difficulty, right? Is this going to be just a continually good neighborhood as long as I live? And if you can't make it on that level, then I think you're starting to get into the area where you're speculating.
That's a better word, and taking risk.
And then
as soon as
the stock price drops more than where you paid for it, those speculations will come to haunt you.
Yes.
Because you will realize, I wasn't that sure about it. In this particular case, I mean, we tried very hard not to get into those kinds of assumptions. In this very case, we sort of didn't dig as deep as we needed to in this $2.6 billion asset, because the valuations that would come up over the whole company were so much higher, and we really didn't need this $2.6 billion to be, it wasn't a critical asset. But as the stock price falls, we reevaluate everything and took a much more conservative view at it, a much longer view at how long it will take this company to roll out its cash flow. And taking that much longer view resulted in a pretty significant change down by a third on what we thought the retail price was. So bring it down by a third, and all of a sudden this $2.6 billion matters.
It's so interesting because I was thinking a minute ago, like when I said that the first thing you have to do is find a wonderful company, I realized I omitted the most important part, which is find it at a good price, which is the key to every, like we can, there are lots of wonderful companies out there that are way too expensive for people to buy who are looking for a great long-term investment. And it truly all comes down to price. So I think you're hitting it on the head.
It so does, because as we're looking at these kinds of assumptions, and you have assumptions, you're inevitably going to make some informed assumptions about the future.
But I think the word that I was looking for is speculation, because that's right. That's different. That's a gamble.
That's a gamble. And so when we look at these informed assumptions about the future, what we know is we're going to get them as informed as we can get them and put them on the level of I'm in a good neighborhood. But at the end of the day, as Charlie says, the vicissitudes of life can change things, and you need a margin of safety. And that margin of safety is the purchase price of the company. So let's say in this case, just as a case in point, I really do think the value of this business is $150 a share, say. And I've reevaluated my assumptions and brought it down to 100 in light of the market being very pessimistic about this. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so at 100. Now I bought it at 75 and I've made a new appraisal of its value, taking it down to 100, assuming this 2.6 billion sticks.
Okay.
It's at 100, right? What if the 2.6 billion doesn't stick? Then it's at 75.
Which is where the market has priced it.
At its value, at what the market put it at. But it's now drifted down, let's say, to 60 or to 50. So now the market's very pessimistic. I'm looking at it thinking very pessimistically, this is 75 and it's on sale for 50. Then I can be aggressive. Follow how this goes?
Yeah, because what you're saying is it's not just that the market price is dropping, full stop. That's not the full story. You're saying there is information that I didn't fully realize was actually critically important. And now that I've redone my story, my evaluation with that piece of information properly accounted for, suddenly my price is way different. And that makes that's completely logical. Of course you're questioning the investment as a whole and then the price, because things changed. Like confidence that I was talking about, where I'm like, yeah, I feel fine, that's only when things stay the same. It's not it's not when things change.
And here's the, this is a pretty sophisticated reanalysis when I get right down to it, because I'm pretty good at figuring out what something's worth. But in this case, the market was depressing the price of this company pretty extremely far from where I thought the value was. And the market's usually not that stupid. Okay. So it required a revaluation. And what I realized was that those investors, when we're talking about the market, we're talking predominantly about Wall Street institutional fund managers. There are several thousand of them, and they're controlling a huge proportion of the money in the market. And more, they're not even managing on an active basis. They're just institutional indexes that are going to sell as something goes down, and they're going to buy as something goes up, and they're completely brainless. So taking that in consideration as, hey, well, we don't have to consider the brainless money. Still, looking at this thing, I realized the length of time that I was comfortable with this investment was very long. I'm looking at this thing and going 10 to 20 years, right? And my overall return will be adjusted on a compounded basis by how long this thing takes to roll out. But the quality of the company was never an issue, ever, and still isn't. It's just rock solid, gonna be there. But I got a little humble on being so blasé about how long it might take. The market was not blasé about that.
So here's They're my question then to you.
Well, let me finish. They're looking at this and just going, "This I'm not gonna value this thing as a 20-year payout. I'm just not going to. I'm the market.
No, of course.
I need the payout to be much faster than that.
Yeah.
And therefore, the value comes down. That's what I didn't really factor in.
Not the value, just the price.
Well, to the market, the value comes down.
The value,
the price accordingly. Yeah.
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 Saying like, okay, I still really like this company. I still want to own it.
100%.
It's just that now the time frame is longer than I thought, but my confidence is still there.
100%.
Why does that change anything?
Well, treat it like this. There's a house for sale in your neighborhood. You're going to rent it. And if you buy it for $400,000, and the rents are going to go up at 4% a year, this whole thing makes total sense, right? Just don't worry about the numbers. Just assume.
Sure.
It makes total sense. That's an on-sale price. It's going to be a super good deal. I'm going to get my 10 cap out of it for sure. All right? Now, the market is saying, though, that they don't like this price. This thing isn't selling at 400, right? It's the price should be lower. And the reason is because this is not going to increase rents at this price. In fact, rents aren't going to increase at all for quite some time. The market doesn't know when it's going to start increasing, but it's not increasing now. It's not going to increase now. And for whatever reason, overabundance of rentals or whatever. And therefore, the price is much lower. So that's kind of what's going on here. And I had to reevaluate the sort of length of time this thing is going to roll out. Maybe I was wrong. Maybe the rollout won't be as it's been in the past. It'll be much slower in the future.
Understood. Why does that matter? It might change your annual ROI. Maybe you care because of that, but why does it matter if you're in for 20 years?
It matters to the market. It doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, well, that's what we're talking about, your investment.
You're right. It matters to me.
Okay.
It matters to me. Because if I look at this thing and say, let's say that I'm expecting cash flow to be 100, 100, 100, 100, 100, starting tomorrow.
Yeah. All right.
And the market is going, there's no 100 tomorrow. Not for years. So I look at this and go, well, whoa, okay, now wait a second. If I'm not going to see cash flow for 5 to 10 years, then you see how the value could change.
I see that the price you pay needs to change.
Right.
Yes.
The value. Because the value of those future cash flows has to be in today's dollars.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. So I'm not going to pay as much for cash flow that starts at $100 5 years from now as I would for something that starts at $100 tomorrow.
Correct. And also, there's some economics term for this, but basically, like, future results, future plans are much less likely than soon happening.
There's more risk.
Plans. How about that for a sentence? Good Lord.
There's
future
more
plans
involved.
Are much less happening than soon plans? Jeez.
I understood every bit of that. So, but all of this to say how important a margin of safety is, right? Because if I've missed the mark for the value, at least according to the market, but I bought it at half of that, you can see how much less risk I'm taking for a complete reevaluation of the whole thing. Now, in this case, it was me maybe not making a good evaluation based on cash flows, but and I who knows if the market's right about that, right? I don't know that they are, but assuming they are, it's going to be slower. Still, I'm in a position where if this stock is at $50, I can buy more. I can buy more here, because it turns out perhaps that I bought it at retail. Now I'm buying at a big discount to retail. I'm buying it, you know, a 30% discount. I could buy more here and reduce my basis overall and have a margin of safety immediately. You see?
Maybe.
How?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, no, I'm at $75 and then I buy at 50, double my position. I'm now at whatever that is, $62.50 basis on something worth 75. So I've gone from having it at its intrinsic value to owning it at a discount of, you know, 15-20%.
And in a weird, perverse way, that is the other arrogant option, right? Like the story changes, the price drops, and the person who doesn't do what you're doing and going like, oh, I gotta need to reevaluate this, goes, oh, this is fantastic. I can lower my basis. I love it.
And they just buy
it. And just buy a ton of it without really figuring out why it's moving in that direction in a perhaps unexpected way.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
all of that is true. All of that is absolutely good. And now the one major caveat to just being, you know, sort of, I guess arrogant was the word you used, and unwilling to consider that you've made any mistakes.
I'm not saying that about you. I'm saying
just in general. If somebody does this, they got it at 75. No, they got a bargain. Now it's at 50. Yeah. This is a super bargain.
Exactly.
They buy more. If the company's debt is such that there's no way that this company can go bankrupt, then if they've gotten in the ballpark of being right about the, I mean, really in a big ballpark of being right about the value in the first place, then that's going to work out. It's going to work out because this company's not going anywhere and the value is going to be inevitable. So, I mean, it is in a weird way.
But how do you know the company's not going anywhere?
Well, again, you got to look at the company and say, this is like buying a home in a good neighborhood and I'm going to rent it. If I paid a little too much, I got this from a real estate investor down in Turks and Caicos once. It was really, really quite cute. I was like, how did you decide to buy down here on this island with very little infrastructure? And how did you know this was going to be this monster thing? And he goes, well, I've learned something in my 40 years of real estate experience. He says, if you buy a good location, even if you pay way too much, it inevitably works out over time. You end up with a positive investment because the location was good. So he said, all I had to know is that people were going to come to this island and I could own real estate here and it would eventually be good.
And the key word there is eventually.
Right, yeah, eventually.
And the issue you're talking about with this company is the eventually.
It's the eventually. Eventually this is going to
work out. How long can you wait before you start getting some visible realized returns?
Right.
And, you know, that's got to be part of the pricing. And I would imagine it was part of his pricing at some point.
So you gotta refer everybody
pay some to price.
I refer for you to look at YouTube and try to find a Buffett video where he talks about buying a farm in Iowa or Nebraska in 1981. The video isn't 1981, but the farm purchase was 1981. And he goes through the analysis of why this was a good investment, right? Farm prices had fallen dramatically. And he looked at corn, and these corn prices were on the low side. And he recognized that over time, those corn prices would have fluctuations. They'd be higher, they'd be lower. But over time, they're generally probably going to rise. And that ultimately, over 20 years, this farm is going to be a very, very good investment. It's not, there's not a real lot of risk that this isn't going to be successful. And so when you look at a company like this one where it's going through something, either in this particular case, the only thing this company is going through is through a macroeconomic cycle on mortgage prices. So the question is, mortgage prices are now at 6 or 7%. They have been as high as 14. They've been as low as 2. You know, so we're in the ballpark someplace of the mortgage prices people get comfortable with and will ultimately pay, and eventually the market will recover. So there's a big assumption there.
Yeah.
And if that's not right, then of course then the whole thing changes.
Well, and of course things change over time. Sure. Things sure. change. I mean, we were going to talk about the Buffett letter today, and I have highlighted here this section where he talks about the energy business that they have and the regulations that have changed that they weren't necessarily predicting, and two, how many forest fires there have been, which is costing them massive amounts of money to replace their infrastructure. So he put in a line that says underground transmission, meaning like underground electricity transmission, may be required, but who a few decades ago wanted to pay the staggering costs for such construction? And of course, in that business, they have to look decades out. They've been working on this development project since 2006, he says. So looking really far ahead at something is really difficult. It's not difficult. It's just difficult to predict with confidence, with certainty, even the variables that are going to be happening.
Sure.
And
I mean that,
and that's the crux of investing long term is like, that's the challenge. How do you handle that future unknown while making decisions right now and essentially being able to pivot when things change?
Well, let's talk about what Buffett says in his letter about that next time.
Oh, we'll talk about the letter.
Shall we?
All right.
All right. Until then.
Okay.
Time to go play. See you guys.
Thanks for sharing your current conundrum, Dad. That was cool.
Oh,
I like it.
You are such a good student and came up with so many good ideas. So, anyway, that's really fun. Thanks
for chatting. All right. Thanks, everybody.
All right,
bye.
See you.
Hi guys, thanks for listening to Invested. If you enjoyed this episode and you want more information or to listen to additional episodes, visit our website at investedpodcast.com and sign up for my virtual workshop right there. Spots are definitely limited for this event. I'm not kidding. They really are. They sell out very quickly. So everything discussed on this podcast, by the way, is either my opinion or it's Danielle's opinion. And it's really important, it's not to be taken as investing advice because I am not your financial advisor. Nor have I considered your personal situation as your fiduciary. So remember that. You're on your own here. This podcast is for your entertainment and education only, and I really hope you enjoyed it.